so many like people are advising him, like, you probably shouldn't mess with her. And I just love the idea that it's like, dude, don't fuck with that lesbian. She will ruin us. It's like, she is a tough cookie. How do, Lillian?
I am so good. I'm feeling like, I'm almost like, I know it's like technically a sin, but I'm feeling like a lot of pride today. How are you feeling, Piper?
I feel a lot of pride, but probably you feel more pride than me. But I'm just, mostly just so excited to be talking about.
You have so much to be proud of
about.
Too, but right now for the next month, I have a little bit more pride than you do.
And that's totally awesome.
Because I'm so queer.
We're Yay! Talking- Welcome, everyone. This is Airbuds. And we're starting off June with not only a palate cleanser, but one that explores the romances of beautiful women in old-timey times and how they power through and they find their love. And it's great.
Yeah. Normally, we don't do this, which is tell people to go watch a thing. Like, I feel like people know they're going to get spoilers listening to this. Mm-hmm. But I will say, as I was watching this, I really want our listeners to go watch it. So if you are listening to this and you have not seen it, it's worth it. Go get that max free trial, babes, and watch Gentleman Jack. It's so good. Do very much. Please, please, please look at trigger warnings because there are some pretty heavy things they go through. Mm-hmm. But also, it's very cute. It's so good.
Dude, okay, you see why for like months I've been like, Lillian, you have to watch it.
But you also see why when I was not feeling at my best, this mm-hmm. was not going to be the thing for me to watch.
Yeah, for sure. But I'm glad that you are at your best now and you saw it and I assume you loved it.
I did love it. Spoilers Yay. For my feelings about the thing we're talking about.
Oh my gosh.
But if you were about to do a recap, so mm-hmm. if you have not, and Piper's going to do it, don't freak out, guys. You're like, it's an 8-episode season. Lillian can't recap this. But if you are thinking about watching it, now is the time to pause. Thank you so much for showing up, but get out of here and then come right back.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, are we ready to recap what this beautiful show is about?
That's really up to you. You want me to time you on your 8-episode recap?
Yeah, do it.
Okay,
tell me when.
Okay, ready when you are.
Alrighty. So, Gentleman Jack is a story of two Annes. One of them is Ann Lister and one of them is Ann Walker. Ann Lister is our main protagonist, and she is a woman who is bold, intelligent, brass, will not stand down for any reason. And she's plowing through life. And she has decided that she wants to find a wife. And damn all societal norms and expectations, she doesn't care anymore. She's had too many girlfriends, like, chicken out on her and be like, you know what? I'm going to get this beard instead. But you and I can still fool around. And she's like, hell no. I'm no adulterer. I'm not going to sleep with someone else's wife. I'm getting a wife of my own. And she heads back to Halifax, where she's from. She's a lorded lady. She has all this stuff. And there's a lovely young lady there named Ann Walker. And after like interacting with her a little bit, first of all, she's beautiful. She's clearly in love with Ann Lister. And she's like, I think I can make this girl my bride that I'm seeking for. There's a whole bunch of stuff that goes on of her kind of seducing her and like kind of opening her eyes to her own feelings and emotions. They have a lot of fun. There's a lot of roadblocks where different people come in and kind of cause doubt. And after all the ups and downs, eventually there's a really happy ending and they get married in secret, kind of, but kind of not. And it's so great. There's also stories about all the troubles that happen when you try to mine coal and how like dangerous that can be. And also there's like this cute little pig farmer boy who kills his abusive father and then gets a wife in the end. So it's nice for him. So there's great things. And this is what we're talking about today. The end.
Well, it was very fast to recap 8 hours of a thing. Mm-hmm. I was very worried that about 40 seconds in was when you went, and then she met somebody named Aunt Miss Walker. And I was like, Oh no.
See, I was only doing high level things.
But yeah, it was 1:35. So very, very fast for a brand new piece for us.
Yay. I was very proud I had thought of this ahead of time. A Tale of Two Annes.
A Tale of Two Annes. I would like tattooed on my forehead. But brilliant. Yeah.
First thoughts.
First of all, great job recapping it. Second of all, there was, when you were talking about the coal and stuff, it made me feel a little bit like North and South, mm-hmm. where I was a little bit worried they were going to go too far into the realities of mining coal in 1835. and I was quite worried about that, but they did not. And they just did the like fun logistical business stuff mm-hmm. for the fun logistical business lady.
See, there's the moment when she went to go tour her own pits and there's a little like 8-year-old boy. And I'm like, well, Lillian's going to have 5 hours on this to talk about. And I love the guys like, no, it's better when they're small because then they can just like scurry down those little mine shafts and they don't have to bump their heads. But this kid bumped his head, but he'll be okay.
Yeah, I do have some historical fun facts, but they are not about coal mining because this is Pride Month and I didn't want to do that to myself.
Yay, we're talking about love.
But for you, Piper, I'm going to put you in a probably uncomfortable position, but I think it's fun and funny.
Okay.
One of these Anns I was in love with, and one of these Anns I related to a little bit more than I wish I did.
Ooh.
Which Ann do you think is which?
I think you're Ann Walker.
Correct.
Yay!
That is accurate. I am so deeply in love with Ann Lister. I can't express how many times I wrote in my notes, hot. This is so hot.
I know. Okay. So in classic me format, the way that I came across Gentleman Jack is because of Pinterest. Bless you, Pinterest. Where, you know, rabbit holes of scrolling through just screenshots of historical dramas kept showing me Ann Lister, which is our main character. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, who is this freaking fox with her top hat and her amazing, like, masculine clothes? She is kicking ass with this look. And I was like so infatuated. So I instantly had to go and watch the show. So I get you, man.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about this. We're not going to, as we do with TV shows, we probably will go somewhat through the plot, but we're going to jump around a bit because if we just went plot by plot, this would be a 70-hour episode. And we haven't gotten that long yet. But we also are not going to talk at all about season two because I stopped myself last night after finishing season one and didn't watch any of season two because I didn't want to spoil it for our listeners. So don't you spoil it for me.
I won't say anything.
But there's so many things about both of them that I loved and also were so real to me. So something that I was thinking about a lot as I was watching this is, so just a quick little background for anybody who's listening to this show, and maybe you listened to like our first episode and then this one, and you were like, I didn't know that Lillian was queer. Well, at the time, Lillian didn't know Lillian was queer. So there's a whole episode of my other podcast, Care So Much, that's about my coming out experience. So if you're interested in that, first of all, how flattering. Second of all, I'm not going to redo that here because that takes so long. go listen to that. But around the time I was like, on a journey of self-discovery. Mm-hmm. Shortly after that, right after I had kind of come out, the show, A League of Their Own, TV show came out. Mm-hmm. And if you have not watched that, please do. It's very good. But it's about it's about baseball players, but it's also mostly about lesbians in the 40s.
Yeah.
And one of the things that kept occurring to me as I was watching this, as I was watching that, I was like really sad and I couldn't explain why because I really liked this TV show and I was feeling really sad about it. And the thing that I realized is like social media was such a big part of my own self-discovery of like listening to other women describe what realizing that they were queer was.
Yeah.
And I wasn't in the closet in the way that like we traditionally think of people in the closet where it's like I knew I was gay and I just was hiding it from everyone. Mm-hmm. I was hiding it from me. I had no idea. And so in watching that, I was like, well, I don't like softball, so I just wouldn't have known. I just never would have figured it out. If I was in the 40s, I just never would have figured it out. And that's in watching this, I loved where they started it. Even though, like, she's kind of being a little manipulative at the beginning, I love that they started it with her realizing she needed to introduce the idea of being attracted to women to Miss Walker. Because that for me was like, that's what I would need. I would need a lesbian like Miss Lister to drop from the sky and be like, I have some news for you. You are gay and you're in love with me.
I'm glad. Okay, this is a fun place to start because so this is my second time watching through Gentleman Jack. And in seeing a second time, whenever she's kind of being sort of strategic about how she interacts with Miss Walker in the first few interactions, mm-hmm. I was wondering to myself, because I knew how it was going to end and how genuine their feelings were going to be. And I was so curious to know if you were kind of like what you would think of that without knowing exactly how it was, if it would be kind of like icky that she was kind of manipulating her, but she's not really manipulating her. It's kind of more an experienced lesbian recognizing mm-hmm. an inexperienced lesbian and being like, just kind of like you said, it's like, well, you kind of need a little push, a little nudge, because otherwise, how are you going to know this is okay?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's exactly how I felt about it, where it's like, and that's why it's so similar to me to A League of Their Own TV show, because there's a similar dynamic there where it's like one woman has the idea that there's something different about her, but she doesn't really understand what that is. And then this mm-hmm. other woman has had past relationships and understands that you have to navigate these things kind of carefully.
Yeah.
And does things that could be seen as manipulative. But I actually think to me, my criticisms of that are more about a society where that's a thing. And I think a lot of those things still hold true today. Like, I think there's a really different experience for people who are raised as women, like who are assigned female at birth and are raised in that way. There is a very similar experience that I have heard from other women to what I have had, which is the idea that like I just like didn't understand my own sexuality. I didn't understand like. Women are not spoken about as if they're sexual beings.
Yeah.
And there's such an extreme of that in, you can take that to such an extreme when you mm-hmm. do a period drama like this.
Yeah.
And you can be like, it's that Bridgerton idea of like, she didn't know what sex was. Like that's which is like true. Like these women didn't know what sex was. Like she didn't understand that you could kiss women. Like she didn't, that's just like not, it just didn't occur to her.
Well, so if we break down one of their like first kind of intimate scenes, I think it's very interesting how Anne Lister, she kind of, the way she sort of opens the door to this conversation is just asking her like, have you ever like kissed a man? Because she starts mm-hmm. telling that story about how when she was in France, someone told her that they gentlemen will like cut holes in their inside of their pockets and they mm-hmm. can like pleasure themselves secretly while in public. And she's like, oh my gosh. And she's like, yeah, but you know, it's France. And she's like, well, have you ever kissed a guy? What about a lady? Ooh, we're here alone. Like, you know, just kind of like, you know, uh-huh. moving down the conversation path towards like having fun. But yeah, so it's an interesting yeah. kind of thing to help kind of lay the stepping stones.
Well, and it's about like, she has to be careful too, right? Because that could be really bad. The consequences for that can be really bad. And mm-hmm. here's my first historical fun fact. So in this time period, it was like gay male sex was illegal. It was illegal for two men to have sex with each other, but it was not illegal. But it was not illegal for two women to have sex with each other. And mm-hmm. one of the biggest reasons that they talk about that, like I have heard, it was not illegal for women. One, sexism, because there is this idea that only penetrative sex is the only real sex. Mm-hmm. Fun fact, it's not. but the other reason is they didn't want women to know it was an option.
Oh my God, of course.
Because if women knew it was an option, they were going to abandon all men, which amazing. To be fair, I have. I don't date men anymore because I found out about ladies.
They brought that up a couple of times. It's something that Anne Lister has to kind of frantically explain several times when Miss Walker kind of starts to backtrack and get scared about, you know, the repercussions of them going forward with this romantic pursuit, and her just always being like, no, it's not illegal though.
Yeah.
And I love that she addressed, that was like one of the greatest scenes in this, that whole kind of first dining room sort of confrontation of her talking about both them being like, well, it could happen. Like a law like that could be like made here. It's mm-hmm. not that way yet. And I loved in classic Anne Lister form, instead of, I was thinking she would be like, well, I would leave this country. She says, no, I would put my head in the noose, because mm-hmm. she's like, I am dying on this hill. I am not going to change for anybody or any law. God made me this way. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that she talks about. I think I wrote that down. I think it's in that scene. It's one of the quotes that I jotted down for this, where she says, I was born like this in this God-given way. And I think that's something that's so beautiful about Anne Lister, is that like, her determination and her fire is like such a key part of her character. But also, like, I love that she is a scientific mind, and she's a very like religious person of like, you know, going to church and talking about faith. And I love how she is like, no, I'm not going to throw aside what I was raised to believe in, like God and this religion. I think he made me exactly the way I'm supposed to be. And that's mm-hmm. great. And he did the same thing for you. And I'm like, this is so beautiful to hear people talk about this. So I love that.
It's so similar to like the way, because she is not, there is this idea, like there's all these rumors in society that like Anne Lister makes people like can't be trusted alone with women because she'll trick them into being queer.
She'll turn them into lesbians.
But there's a moment in the second episode when she's talking about Miss Walker. I'm going to just call him Miss Walker and Miss Lister, because otherwise I'm going to say Anne so many times that it's going to stop having meaning. It's not going to be a name. It's going to be a sound. I can't remember if it's like right after the conversation about kissing or right before the conversation about kissing. She needs to realize the nature of what she feels for me is love. Like, mm-hmm. and that's been her experience. Like we've seen her love affairs with these other women. Like that's been her experience, is that she knows what it is that she feels. Mm-hmm. She has this like very specific experience that she's had, which I would watch the shit out of a prequel of this, because
yeah.
the descriptions of like how she was when she was in her early 20s sounds so interesting to me. But I think that to me is like, she has this view that what she is natural. And there's a scene much later. So something that happens kind of throughout is this conversation around like, should they have this marriage or not? Like, that's what she's looking for. And they're having a conversation much later. That's kind of that first conversation that you referenced, they have, is sort of the catalyst for this idea that like it is them being together right or wrong. And she's mm-hmm. sort of acted like she doesn't understand why Miss Walker won't be mm-hmm. with her. She's sort of gone, just like plowed forward, which you see her do in so many different situations. She has this moment of vulnerability when they're in bed together, where she says, I do understand. Like, mm-hmm. I do understand why you don't want to be with me and why you can't be with me. And this description of like, I feel that way. I've known this, like, this is who I am. And so I have just determined, I'm just determined to not let that define my life. So I pick myself up and power forward, but I do understand. Mm-hmm. And it's that first moment where we really see, up until that point, Miss Lister has been like this mentor for her almost, of like, she gets cold feet and she comes in and like, just goes, no, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And like, she just sort of lets Miss Walker spew all of her insecurities, because there's no one else you can talk to about it. Like, that's right. The thing that's so hard about this is like, if I was going through something like that, I could come talk to you and be like, I don't know, I just like have all these weird feelings about it, where it's like, you have to talk to the person who the feelings are about. Like, you have these conflicted feelings and you have to talk to that person, because it's literally the only person on the planet you can talk to about it. And so she has this moment of vulnerability where she's like, it's that first time we see her say like, this is also hurtful to me. Like, when you say that you feel this is unnatural, like, you're saying that about fundamentally who I am. Like, you yeah. have the ability to go back into the closet and no one mm-hmm. would know the difference, and you could just live your life.
Yeah.
And it is very clear from the way I've lived mine, I couldn't do that.
Yeah. And she doesn't want to.
Yeah.
I think it's so great to see vulnerable moments for Anne Lister. And I'm going to keep saying Anne, but because she gives off this like strong, like powerful persona. So I love, but she's been hurt so many times. Mm-hmm. Every time she has like been vulnerable and opened herself up to these women in her past. And so I love seeing the moments with her and Miss Walker when like when she has that scene, I think that you're referencing, when they're lying in bed and she kind of starts to cry in front of Miss Lister, being like, I know why, like, I understand why you don't want to be with me, because nobody wants to be with me, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's a moment of her insecurity and feeling self-conscious. And then, yeah, later she has a line where she's like, I know, like, do you think that doesn't hurt me? Do you think I don't mm-hmm. have feelings? And then again, at the very end, when they meet on that hillside for like the final kind of like, we're going to be together forever moment. And when, you know, she sees Miss Walker again and she's being so tender and she has this look in her eyes and she's like, please don't hurt me. And I just like, I love it so much, because it's like, she's the most powerful woman on the planet and she's so afraid of having her heart broken again. And it's just like, you are delicate and you are strong and both are wonderful. And I love it. It's so good.
And like, that fundamentally is like what she wanted. She wanted to be able to love someone in a way that didn't feel as fragile. So she had the safety to be that vulnerable. Like mm-hmm. that, she has not had safety. Like
yeah.
she doesn't get moments of vulnerability with her family, with mm-hmm. anyone in her life, because the only person she can be vulnerable with is somebody who loves her and isn't going to leave. And she has not had the luxury of being vulnerable. Yeah. And that is what Miss Walker gives her, is the luxury of being vulnerable.
Absolutely.
And I just love it.
Before we move on to another topic of conversation, yes. One other thing that I think is really interesting that I want to highlight in this kind of idea that we've been talking about of like Anne Lister being sort of like a guide and a mentor for Miss Walker into, you know, her gay feelings and all this stuff, is one thing that I think is also great, because when she's talking to her aunt, which is, by the way, a beautiful relationship, how mm-hmm. open and honest she is with her aunt. And she's like telling her about Miss Walker and how she thinks maybe she would be a good companion for her and wants her to come live at Shipton, which is the house that they have. And the aunt says, she's like, well, there's a good 12 years between you. So quite a few little Jane Eyre moments that kind of stood out to me.
So many Jane Eyre moments.
Which is why I cast them for my gay uh-huh. fan cast. But one thing that I think is so interesting is because, so all the other like women that she's been romantic with in the past have been closer to her own age. And I think they, because they've been at least in somewhat of a like gay society, I feel like they have certain like rules kind of ingrained into their heads mm-hmm. about how this works. And I think for many people who aren't Anne Lister, they're like, well, you fool around for a bit, but then you find a husband and you just like, you know, settle down and fool around on the side or something. And so I think by introducing Miss Walker to this like way of life, I think she's also able to like not let her kind of get these ideas, right? She's there to be like, you know what, we can be together though. Like that's an option. And she can kind of, you know, plant that seed and kind of chase away that fear before it can really get, you know, rooted, I think. So
yeah, for sure. And I also think that there's a layer too of like, she is a lot younger than her, but she's not young. Like she's 29. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of intersectionality that's interesting to talk about in this as well, because they're both wildly privileged women.
Oh yes.
In so many ways. And then they have this specific way where they're very much not. Mm-hmm. And so I think like she sees in Anne Walker, she sees the fact that that's somebody who probably doesn't want to get married. Like mm-hmm. she wants to find somebody who is already at a point where they don't want to get married, mm-hmm. that she can be like, okay, well, if you don't want to get married, then we can be together. And it wouldn't mm-hmm. be like, because if she was like 22 or something, like I get the impression too, there's that woman when she goes to Copenhagen, who's like mm-hmm. very flirty with her, very aware that she's young and hot, like definitely sees Anne Lister as like almost adventure. Mm-hmm. Like she, yeah. that's kind of how she engages with her, is like, you would be like a fun, scandalous thing for me to experience.
Yeah.
And I get the impression that that's kind of the two sides of that coin that she's gotten, is like, mm-hmm. she's someone's adventure or she's someone's secret, but she doesn't yeah. get to be someone's like partner. And that's yeah. what she wants, is like a yeah. real partner. And it's so heartbreaking to watch her be stuck in a situation where she can't really have that.
Yeah. Until Miss Walker finally yeah. says yes and means it.
Yeah.
So something you just touched on leads to another topic of conversation that I think is really interesting, is that so the relationship between Anne and her sister, whose name I think I wrote down Marion. So Marion is like always talking about politics, and she at one point brings in this potential suitor who is a very like, change is good, let's like do all this stuff to like, you know, innovate and everything. And it's so I think there's an interesting, a lot of times when we're seeing scenes between Anne and Marion, Marion is like talking about all these progressive things. And there's a lot of that that actually Anne Lister is kind of against. Mm-hmm. And what's so interesting about that, because she's very progressive when it comes to like LGBTQ like things back then, but then she's not happy to know that they're going to be giving more like voting rights to unlanded people. And it's so interesting to see those conversations. But my theory about why she feels that way is because she, as a woman, doesn't have voting rights, but as a landed individual, she has some influence. But now all of these male unlanded people are suddenly going to come pushing in, and that's going to take away even less of, or even more of, the very little amount of like influence and control that she has. So it's so interesting to be like, normally that would be a very progressive thing. It's like, yes, we have to give like equal votes to all these people. Like the merchants and the tradesmen are just as valuable as like the landowners. And she's like, no, no, we don't need those riffraff around. Like, please, I hardly have a vote as it is.
Well, she doesn't have a vote. Like, that's part of what she's saying is like,
but she has some influence.
Exactly. And I think it's so interesting because it's really similar. There are so many parallels as well to North and South that I see in this because, it is one of those things where we have this view today that progressive ideals kind of all go together. Mm-hmm. But her views and her feminism, and honestly, even her feelings about like queer relationships, I think are so rooted in that power dynamic that you're talking about. Because often there's a question. So I'm about to get a little political. So if that's going to make you upset, I guess like skip forward, because this is still how I feel. Like, just because I don't say it doesn't mean it's not how I feel. But like, it's sort of like a lot of people will be like, I don't understand how women could vote for Trump. And it's like, it's generally white women. And it's because like, it's the same thing that we're seeing with Anne Lister here, where it's, when you face one form of oppression, like she's a woman, and her, we'll call it lifestyle, is like not accepted. Like her gender expression, her like romantic life is very, very unacceptable to these people. And so the idea, she has some ties to some power structures though. Yes. So she needs to keep those power structures. But and the reality of it is, so it's like, that's something that's so often true, is when you face one form of oppression, you end up clinging to the other forms of power that you have.
Yeah.
Like whiteness. Mm-hmm. You have privilege as a white person, so you need that power structure to continue to exist. The problem is, all those power structures are tied together. Mm-hmm. If you got rid of the power structures of white supremacy, if you got rid of the power structure of patriarchy, if you got rid of the power structures of classism, those are all tied together and ultimately feed into one another. And so it is the power structure that is trying to make it seem, because the people who have the most power are still the richest, whitest men in the society. And they're the ones oppressing her as well. Yeah. So if she took the side of the people who also were trying to be liberated, that together they would have more power. Yes. But by dividing them, they don't.
And I love that when you're saying the most powerful are the richest, whitest men. And she's got, Anne's got two of those three things.
Yeah.
She's rich. She's so white. Rich.
She's so white. She's also, I forgot to say, she's also very gay. So you have to be straight for sure. Very important. And sis, oh my God, don't even talk to me.
Marion is such an interesting character in this show, because I feel really bad for her in the way that everyone treats her. And I think it's the kind of effect of a sibling who is forever stuck under the shadow of the older or more confident or more successful kind of sibling situation. Because like, she can hardly get a word in when Anne is in the room, and Anne talks over her. She belittles all of her like remarks. And there are so many moments where I feel like we see Marion, you know, offer an olive branch to Anne, and she won't do the same in return. So like when they've had this fight and they're walking into town together because Marion is trying to make amends, and they do both have a moment of apologizing for what they said to one another, but kind of in that little lull after they've addressed that, then Anne asks her sister, she's like, is it okay if I ask Miss Walker to live with us? Because it's like that, it's a kind of mm-hmm. thing of her being like, hey, like, you know what this is about, right? Essentially, can my wife come to our house and be married with mm-hmm. us and be fine? And her sister's like, yeah, of course. No, I love her. That'd be great. She's like, and likewise, can I have this guy to lunch? And she's like, fuck no, he's a tradesman. And it's like, what? Come on, Anne.
I also agree that the way she gets treated is not super fair, but also the way that she acts is sometimes like, oh, sweet pea.
Yeah.
I also will say there are moments that are sort of alluded to that she may not be quite as supportive of her sister's, again, lifestyle. I don't like it, but we're going to call it lifestyle.
Her gayness, her sexual adventures.
Being super, super queer.
Yeah.
But because there's moments where she sort of makes semi-derogatory terms, like comments around the idea of her being a companion of this woman that she had been living with. Hmm. And there are also moments where, like, she's going to say something, Anne Lister's going to say something about her, like, experience, or she's going to talk about Miss Walker with her aunt or whoever. And she comes up with a reason to have Marion leave the room. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's a fear reaction, that she's afraid that her sister isn't going to be supportive, or if it's she has some reason from the past to not trust her sister. But maybe. I also feel like they have such a animosity that mm-hmm. there's not an invalid fear that her sister would take whatever opportunity to grasp her own power, because that's a power she would have over Anne. If there is a reason that she might have a claim to this land, and right now she doesn't, and there's clearly a lot of animosity around that idea, which mm-hmm. like, calm down, sweetie.
Well, that's something.
Do you want to run this place?
Yeah, like during their biggest fight, that's like what she threatens. She's like, "I'm going to get married, and I'm going to have a son, and then he mm-hmm. will like be the lord of this place." And she's like, "Wow, you're going to go through pregnancy just to like get back at me? Awesome, sounds great.
Good plan, solid plan, girl."
I don't get the impression that their animosity towards one another is enough that she actually fears her sister's rejection or any kind of like that she would take any kind of action against her because of the way that she lives or the way that she is. I don't see that as a thing.
I don't think it's a rational fear. I don't think Marianne would actually do it, but I think that she's been burned so many times, that's sort of irrelevant.
Interesting. I view all the family members and the staff within their household to be completely safe. That Shipton Hall feels like a safe space for Anne.
I think it's more nuanced than that.
Probably.
I don't disagree that most of them are aware of what's happening and are actively taking steps to stop it. Mm-hmm. But even her aunt at one point makes a comment about how somebody might not want to be with her and that that's like a logical choice to make. And I know that that's not intended to be hurtful, mm-hmm. but it is. Like, I don't think Anne Lister has a safe space.
Interesting. Because I don't recall that one line from the aunt. The only thing that I ever get from the aunt that she, if she ever cautions Anne, it mm-hmm. simply comes from a place of like love and concern.
For
which
sure.
of course is like, doesn't mean it's not necessarily an unsupportive remark, but it's, yeah, I don't know. I feel as if, that's just the impression that I got, that Anne feels completely safe with her family.
Yeah, I don't get that impression. Okay. I get the impression that she feels safer with her family than most people. I get the impression that her family has at a minimum all accepted there's nothing that they're going to do to change her. Mm. And because of that, she's the most herself around them. But I don't think she would feel safe with the servants knowing things. I like truly having
most
evidence
of the servants,
against them.
Most of the servants definitely know because
knowing
the cook, the
and having
cook,
evidence is different though.
Well, I'm not saying they need evidence, but everyone knows about like who she is in the household. And they're like, yeah, that's Anne. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I
because
I think,
like,
I think
the main lady used to be her her lady's maid before she had that leg injury.
Yeah.
And I love there's that moment when she's talking to the new lady's maid, this French woman. And she says to her, she's like, you used to be her lady's maid. You know what she does alone with women. And she's like, well, yeah, but I don't know. I get the impression. And especially since like once it's revealed that the French lady's maid is pregnant, everyone in the house instantly knows, all the staff do anyway. So if there's no way no one in that household doesn't know that Miss Lister likes to bang ladies and they're just like seem totally fine. They're like,
I think there's a difference between knowing and not caring and being a safe person.
Okay. Yeah.
Because people can know and not care and still think that it's wrong, like morally wrong. And that makes it not a safe space.
Gotcha.
I think there's a very subtle nuance of, I've had people in my life personally who I have come out to who have essentially responded in the way of like, that's like fine for you, but keep that to yourself.
Yeah.
And that's not something that I'm going to do, which by the way, in case anybody listening to this has made it 36 minutes into the episode and has decided, but they're still feeling real homophobic, you'll get blocked so fast. If you say any shit to us on the internet, I'm going to block you so fast. You have no idea.
Especially during Pride Month.
I know. You're coming at me during my first out Pride. Are you kidding me? But I just think that there is a difference. What is required for a safe space is a lot more than knowing and not actively being a threat.
Okay. Yeah.
Good insight. I think that that's a nuance that I just want to clarify is that like,
cool.
I think with her aunt is the safest space she has because her aunt's never, she's able to openly speak with her about this. Her aunt's never going to do anything about it.
Yeah.
But in a moment of rage, if Marianne had evidence that she was doing something that she felt she could get all of, what's the name of the place called?
Shipton.
If she felt she could get all of Shipton and she was really mad, I don't think she would do it on purpose. I don't think she would do it. But like if Anne stopped her wedding, like stopped her from getting married and she felt she could do something to take Shipton and take her power away, she might. And I don't think Anne's unaware of that possibility.
Okay. I think, okay, so another thing to kind of like build on this and also pivot to an observation that was interesting to me in the second watch through of this is as confident and bold as Anne Lister is about so many things, I thought it was so interesting that whenever she would have like an intimate moment with Miss Walker, there was always a glance over the shoulder, a closing of the door, a drawing of the blinds. Like she would always be like, I can't have someone walk in and see something and cause trouble. And so it's very interesting to see her kind of always be like, she's always watching her six kind of a
it's
thing.
It's the constant vigilance of like, but which also like, that is another thing that is like truly heartbreaking to me is that like, you can't just have a moment with someone. And I know that that's like, that's true of straight unmarried couples at this time as well. But the difference is they can get married.
Yeah.
This is not that.
Yeah, totally.
So. And like Mr. Rochester getting caught kissing Jane didn't mean that he was ostracized from society and at risk of being like truly injured. Nobody was going to hurt that man or Jane about what happened.
Yeah. Also with Anne's, I love how like they show Anne Lister being very cautious about so many things. And then it's kind of like a reap and a sow moment where it's like, does she need to be that cautious? Apparently, yeah, because the freaking wife of Miss Walker's cousin who like walks around the back. I love, she has a phrase like early on when she's getting to be suspicious. She's like, I don't want to be a busybody, but I am going to stop by. And she like goes to the house, doesn't knock on the door, walks around the back, notices that the windows like blinds are drawn, goes inside and then like refuses to be announced and just like barges right in to like get all that like info and like ruin their great makeout session.
I did love, my favorite part of that moment is when she left the room, Anne Lister's looking at Anne Walker like, oh my, we just got caught. She's going to freak the fuck out.
Yeah.
Anne Walker just laughs.
Just
like,
breaks into laughter.
That was so funny to me.
It was so good and so relieving because I was like, later episodes of the first season does have a lot of like, you know, societal influence causes doubt. She pushes Anne Lister away and it causes a lot of heartbreak, but there's some beautiful like honeymoon moments in the early and middle part of the show when they're just going for it and they're just like living mm-hmm. life and like being with each other and they're saying like fuck it to society just as a Rochester would. And I just loved that it gave us those moments because I feel like and this is something I cannot speak intelligently on because I haven't done any kind of research. I just have kind of heard other essayists kind of talk about this from both a when talking about like both gay representation in movies and shows and also Black representation in movies and shows. I've heard the critique talking about too often sometimes people within those communities feel that the content is all sad and negative. And they're mm-hmm. like, yes, this is an ugly truth about, you know, the way that people treat us. But also we need to promote happy stories mm-hmm. and positive stories as well and stories of joy. And so I love that the show gave us a lot of nice moments like that. Yeah. It wasn't like being gay in the old days was hard and scary. It's like, no, but sometimes there were lots of sweet moments when you found the right person.
Yeah, if you're rich enough, you can do whatever you want.
Yay!
But like, I think it's important to do both things.
Yes.
And I also think that it's important to have moments of joy and not mm-hmm. just moments of joy, but like a happy ending as well.
Yeah.
And this isn't the ending, but I did at one point do a Goog to be like, do these two make it? Because mm-hmm. if they don't, I'm going to have to murder Piper for real.
No, I knew when we were talking about our survey and you were like, I want ones with happy endings. I would have said something if they didn't get together in the end. I knew they were getting married. So I was like, no, this is going to be great.
Because I did like genuinely, that is a trope. So mm-hmm. like you mentioned, that is a trope specifically. It's true of all of those things that you said, but specifically queer women tend to die at the end of stories. They mm-hmm. tend to be killed tragically and have a tragic ending. Mm-hmm. And it is to the point where I looked at multiple lists before our survey mm-hmm. of queer, not even period dramas limited to, like it was mm-hmm. queer stories about women. And the majority of them still, they either didn't have a happy ending or often the characters died.
And so it's 10 points to Gentleman Jack for giving us some joy.
And here's a little fact that I'm wondering if you know. Do you know that this is based off of a true story?
Well, of course. So Anne Lister, in the title sequence, when you get the title card itself, it says inspired by the journals of Anne Lister. Mm-hmm. And that's how they know so many details because they talk about this in the show itself. She was an avid journalist. Mm-hmm. And like the way they show her writing, it's like incredibly small print. And she would just fill these books and she wrote everything down. So
she
whoever
also
found
wrote
it.
In code?
Yeah.
So she wrote, I don't know if you like, I don't want to step over you if you have some of these historical fun facts. They're just ones that I found. So she wrote in code that was she used like multiple different types of script. So she used literal letters from alphabets that weren't English. And that was for her own personal diaries. She documented everything. Mm-hmm. I want to say in the like late 60s, 1860s, someone found like some Lister relative found her journals, spent some time breaking the code, broke the code, read all about her affairs. Told no one because he was also gay and didn't want to draw attention to the family. Aww. So he just kept that. He just like put them back in storage, kept it a secret, had translated all of these diaries and didn't want to tell anybody. And it wasn't until the mid 1900s, I think, that somebody like found these and shared them out and like talked about the fact that 100 years prior there had been this lesbian woman who was out there living her best life.
Seriously. Okay, so I've got a few little notes that I've just written down about Anne that I want to share. So my first thing that I literally wrote for this is that Anne Lister doesn't play by societal rules. She defies all gender roles, and she does it with such powerful confidence. Mm-hmm. I wrote down that I find her strength very inspiring, and I want to see more female characters like this, bold, confident, and unyielding. I feel like it's something that we don't get enough, even today in like modern things. If you have a strong female character, I don't know, there's this kind of like rudeness and cruelty that they have to adopt, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's the fault of the writers for being like, well, powerful women are bitches. And it's like, no, And like the thing is about Anne is that she's challenging to those who are challenging to her, but mm-hmm. she's only ever like rude or awful when someone actually like threatens her or someone she cares about. And there's this great, I love how every person that meets her is so taken and inspired by her. They're all like, wow, she's so interesting. And there was a note that I also made that I think is so interesting too, is that so many of Anne's enemies start off as her admirers. And I think most notably that comes to mind is Miss Walker's, like the wife of her cousin.
I have the name somewhere in my notes, so keep talking and I'll find it.
So Miss Walker's cousins, which is this guy and his wife, they, in opening, when they first start talking about Anne Lister, it's nothing but praise. She's like, oh, she's so smart and traveled and fascinating, and she's mesmerizing. Like, you can't wait for you to meet her. And she thinks she's so cool until she knows that she's, like, boinking her cousin. And then she's like, no, this is bad. I don't like this. And then she, like, turns. But even after the fact, she, like, Anne Lister wins her back somewhat. Like, she's not totally on board with her anymore, but she does, like, she's, like, civil with her and such. And there's another great moment where one of the friends that is staying with Miss Walker when she's having this nervous breakdown, first of all, it's her nervous breakdown is so intense that it scares one of the friends away. She can't stay at the house with her anymore.
She tells her to leave.
Okay, that's part of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the other friend comes to stay with her and she's equally freaked out. And so Miss Lister comes to help. And the next morning they're in the dining room together and the friend says to Miss Lister, she's like, I've heard such awful things about you and I'm so sorry for ever giving any credence to that. What I witnessed last night is that you are just so kind and thoughtful and you are the greatest person ever. And I apologize for ever thinking bad thoughts about you. And it's like, oh, Anne, just keep being amazing and people, you'll win them over unless they're total assholes and then who needs them?
Well, and that's, I think that that's like, that's almost a, like her charm is part of the way she's able to live the way she does.
Yeah.
Is like people walk into a room with her and they're like, listen, maybe I thought it was weird, but she seems great. So it's sort of like you see that with all the people in Denmark where they like absolutely think she's this entertaining person, but also they're charmed by her. There's a million things I want to talk about with her in Denmark, but
I'm trying to find this one note that I jotted down. Oh, yes. Okay. So along that line, there's like, for example, I think her greatest kind of adversary in the show is this this asshole, awful man who's stealing her coal. He is drunk all the time. He was recklessly driving his carriage. In the first scene of the show, he's driving this little carriage that like throws a whole bunch of people off the road and a little boy loses his leg because of it. He's just like an asshole of a guy. But I love how when he's like trying, he's plotting with his brother about like, you know, how to like better take advantage of Miss Lister because she's getting involved in the coal industry. And so many like people are advising him like, you probably shouldn't mess with her. And I just love the idea that it's like, dude, don't fuck with that lesbian. She will ruin us. It's like, she is a tough cookie.
Something they said, there were a couple phrases that they used a lot in this show. One of them was, she's gonna run circles around you. Love it, because she did. She would have conversations with people and just like paint them into this corner where they couldn't handle anything. She's also physically strong, because I was very worried at one point she gets beaten up and she
fights back
because there was a fact that is tragically still true is that particularly butch lesbians are often assaulted. Ooh. Because
what else am I supposed to say? Aw, no, fuck those guys. How dare you beat up our butch friends?
That's just the funniest.
Boo.
You're like, I need to support what Lillian just said. It is bad when people, so they're not just beat up. They're often sexually assaulted because rape is a power thing, in case anyone's wondering. So I was very worried. I was like, I'm going to watch this lady get raped now. And then she beats the shit out of him. And I was like, just kidding. That's how I want all rape scenes to end.
Exactly.
I want somebody to attempt to assault someone and then get the shit beaten out of them. That's the message we should be telling to society.
Yes. No, I was only sad that she threw his stick away. Because I'm like, no, keep that and whip his ass with it. She confronts and threatens the man who molested Anne Walker.
Oh, and that was honest to God. Everything after she learns about this assault, I'm like, I'm in love with this woman.
Yes. Yes. So she
protect
like
protect me.
he's this awful clergyman who, like, as soon as his wife dies, he's instantly showing up at Anne Walker's door, being like, oh, like, I should marry you, because we always joked when my wife was alive that you would take care of me if she kicked the bucket. Well, she's dead now. And it's revealed, like, that poor Miss Walker has all this horrible trauma because he molested her and did all this gross, awful stuff and made it like her think that she was worthless. And so Aunt Lister is the best. And she's like, no, dude, you did nothing wrong. I will fix this. And finds him and threatens him in the most beautiful way. And she's like, if you dare take this position to become the clergyman in this town, I will fucking horsewhip you. And it's just like so goddamn good.
Why is that so sexy to me?
It is.
Why is her threatening him with violence real hot?
And then he tucks his little tail under his balls and he runs away.
And he's like, that's one of my favorite things about Miss Walker too, is like every time she shows a backbone, all the people around her are fucking floored. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a misunderstanding about mental health, that somehow it's a weakness.
Yeah.
It's not a weakness, something yeah. else.
Yeah.
But before we move away from the clergyman, I have come up with a theory.
Mm.
And I want everybody to know this is mostly a joke, in case you're offended, because we've mostly recently offended someone. And they got very mad and they stalked us across the internet, and I ended up having to block them on 3 platforms. Anyway.
Oh my gosh.
But this is a joke mostly. So here's my evidence. St. John, broccoli, Mr. Collins, whatever that dude's name from Emma was, and this motherfucker. I think that we can't trust the clergy. I don't think we should trust them. They all seem very untrustworthy. I can't think of in all these period dramas we've watched, I can't think of a single clergyman who's not a fucking creep.
Not a big old creep. Well, you know, they get a position of power and then they think, God wants me to have whatever I want. And that's not true. So,
And we have a very exciting guest coming on soon to talk about the theology of Jane Eyre, and we'll see what she thinks.
Oh my gosh.
Should we trust clergy members? Just our first question.
First question. Be like, put me on the hot spot, man. There are a lot of like little random details. First of all, there's a quote that I have to share going back to just like, cause I could talk for hours about how much I adore just her bolsterous confidence. Ugh. But, she has this one line where she says, aren't we lucky to be alive, to have life? Isn't every tiny moment an inexplicable delight packed with potential?
Ugh.
And it's just like, oh God, like she's such a beautiful optimist. I was also like a few, like maybe second episode, I wrote to myself, there's a line from the musical Hadestown that is so Anne Lister. And it's about, in the song, it's about Orpheus. And it says that he could see the way the world could be in spite of the way that it is. And I'm like, aw, Anne Lister's right there with you, but she's also going to pistol whip somebody to make it happen.
Specifically only for rich white lesbians.
Yes, of course.
This is not for everyone.
Another little detail that I just wanted to point out that I thought was so awesome is, so she goes to visit the household of the boy who lost his leg in the carriage accident. And I'm first going to mention this and then I want to talk about something tangentially, but I love when so he hasn't spoken since the accident because he's been traumatized by this and losing his leg. And she sits down and she's saying all these things and being so smart and acting like a doctor to kind of like check the boy out to make sure he's well. And then she just kind of looks at him and he looks back and he speaks for the first time. And what he says is, are you a man? And he just like asks if she's male, and she just handles it so coolly, and I love it, where she doesn't like seem offended or she doesn't dodge or make a joke. She's like, you know what, I've been asked that a whole lot, and there was this one time I was in Paris and I thought I looked great, I had all the feathers and all the satin stuff, and people still thought I was a dude. So yeah, I don't know, good observation, kid, glad you're talking again. It's just like, she just goes and it's great.
Speaking of random side characters in this show, I don't want to talk about this a lot, but I do love that one of the lessons that we're supposed to take away from this show, or at least what I'm taking away, is if you have an abusive father, just kill him.
Dude.
It's going to work out great. Everything will go good after you murder your abusive father.
Seriously, another thing that I really love about this show, similar to how you were feeling about how she handles the clergyman, this show takes bad people and they give them their just desserts. They get their comeuppance. The father who gets killed, so he's like a drunk, he abuses his family, like he literally like punches his son and his wife and like is going after the kid, and they have to like wrestle him and tie him into the pig like pen. And then, you know, at first the kid's like, well, maybe I'll let you go and all this stuff, but as soon as he like cuts one of the ropes, the dad's like, I'm gonna kill you. And he's like, I'm just gonna let the pigs eat you, dad. And he feeds his father to pigs after slicing his throat, and it's like so intense, and I'm like, this is dark, but also that guy kind of deserved it. I'm okay that he's gone.
Well, and like, I also think that it's, he took the threat, the father, like he learned that from his dad, because mm-hmm. his dad was constantly saying that to people as a way, like the mom thought that he was going to kill her and that's how she was going to end up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I guess like don't explain to your children. And then also like, what an idiot that he's tied to this chair still. He cuts off the one rope and the guy's like, I'm free now. I'm going to kill you. And it's like, no, you're not.
Dude. Oh my gosh.
I think it was I argue self-defense.
It's self-defense.
They sort of planted seeds like it might be a problem in season two. And I don't know that I care.
Well, yes, I love that he's instantly rewarded with like, not that it's a reward. That's the bad wording.
Women are a reward. They're a prize to be won.
I was just going to say, Jasmine was wrong. We're all prizes to be won. he meets the daughter of Mr. Washington, who is kind of like the, what's the term for his job?
Manager?
Yeah, kind of. He meets Mr. Washington's daughter, and she's just absolutely charming and delightful. And their cute little scene, both when they meet on the road, and she's like, he's taking this pig to like someone to slaughter it or whatever. And she calls the pig incredibly handsome, and then they have that cute little chat under the tree. And it's the sweetest little like, oh, well, you could propose to me and like all this stuff. And it's so cute. So I'm happy for them, and I'm glad they found each other.
I love that conversation under the tree where it's like, she wants me to get married. And she's like, have you thought about that? And then they have this whole conversation. He's like, I didn't think you'd want to marry me. You live in a big fancy house. You wouldn't want to live in this house, would you?
It's so cute. And I love how she's so like, cute. She's like, I could teach your sisters how to read. He's like, you could teach me how to read. It's really charming.
It's so cute.
I love Mr. Washington. And I love, too, that right from the start, like, she brings him in because the guy who had his job beforehand, I want to say a solicitor, but that's, like, a legal thing. He goes out and, like, manages her tenants for her.
And I will say I have some notes on this man, and it's mostly the leg, gross, gross, gross.
Mr. Washington comes in right away, and he's just like instantly treating her as an equal. He's giving her like all this amazing advice, and it's partially just because he's a great guy, but I love that he like mentions in that first conversation that he's the father of six daughters. Yes. And I'm like, aw, I'm like, well, maybe because he's like, he loves his girls, and he's like, I hope my girls are as smart and as talented as you are someday, Miss Lister. I'm happy to work for you. And it's just really nice.
There's a lot of good girl dads on this.
Yeah.
Because also the guy who almost marries the maid, he has three daughters who laugh at him when he says he's gonna get married.
And they're like, who to? And all this other stuff. They're like, only if she had a face like a bust shoe.
That to me is like a safety. Like they know that they're safe enough to roast their dad so hard.
Totally.
Just like when the when what's his nuts comes to ask for the girl's hand, he comes to ask Miss Washington, and like the little girl like goes in the kitchen, he's here in his Sunday best, and all of a sudden three of them are sprinting out of the room to go listen at the door. Very Pride and Prejudice. I loved it.
So cute. You didn't really watch Downton Abbey super closely, or did you?
I did. I just didn't watch like I stopped around the time, spoilers for Downton Abbey, so skip forward 10 seconds, Sybil died.
Yeah. I mean, she was my favorite too. So, but the guy who, with the three daughters who got roasted by his daughters, because haha, hilarious. That actor, he was in early seasons of Downton Abbey, and he was the one who loved Daisy. Yeah. And Mrs. the cook bullied Daisy into marrying him on his deathbed. So that's the same guy.
Okay.
Anyway.
No, I was just remembering that. Another thing, we could talk about this show for several hours.
Yes.
So I feel like we should head into some last thoughts and mm-hmm. sections. And one of the biggest ones that I can just feel our audience specifically clamoring for is the fashion in this is incredible.
It's amazing. Okay, it's so Lillian, so good. When we were doing the fashion episode with Layla and she was showing us the fashion plates of the enormous sleeves, and I'm like, it's uncanny how well the fashion was done in this show. So
it's
Layla,
so
I hope,
well done.
I'm sorry I never sent you my brother-in-law's HBO login, but hopefully you found another way to get to it.
I will send it this week before, by the time you're listening to this, you'll have it.
Maybe. No promises.
Come on. Tommy's not going to care. So it was so much fun to watch this having talked to Layla, because I watched it and I went, oh, look, it's the waists and the sleeves and the crazy 1930s fashion. the patterns were wild.
Yeah.
What she wore to the, and I, what I love is how accurate that was, and then how they took these like minor differences in the way that Miss Lister's fashion was. Like, if they didn't have the slightly higher waists of the 1830s for the women, then her lower waist that was more similar to what men were wearing wouldn't have stood out as much, but it did.
Yeah.
And I thought it was so good. Every single, bonnet was incredible. It was so good. And then I also, another fashion moment that we simply must talk about is the white dress that she wears when she goes to meet the Danish queen
for her birthday party.
the scene killed me, because we've seen her doing this walk the whole show. Whole show she has this like really intense, very determined walk, and it's so good. And then she does that same walk in a delicate lady dress, and it just, to me, it really drives home the point of like, you can put her in whatever clothes you want, this woman is not gonna change. Like,
seriously,
that she is not gonna become a delicate lady because you put her in a pretty white dress.
It's so good. And she swoops up that girl that you mentioned earlier who sees her as a potential adventure and waltzes her around the ballroom. And it's just wonderful.
Oh, it's so good. A couple other just like random things that I wanted. I have a couple other things to random to talk about. Do you have anything else?
I knocked over some stuff. No. My last kind of thing is just sort of like a vibe, talking about, it's tangential to the fashion, but I also feel like this show feels like autumn, like the way, because it is fall for a lot of it and it goes into winter, but it's also, I just love seeing all of these characters with their multiple layers of very thick fabric, but they're out walking in these beautiful wildernesses where it's kind of autumny and it looks very like windy. And so it looks comfortable. They don't look like they're sweating to death in their costumes. It's like, no, they dressed beautifully and warmly, and now they're out in the autumn countryside. And I'm like, ooh. And also, maybe I watched this for the first time in autumn, but that's, it just gives me those warm vibes.
It does feel like a cup of cider would go well with this. Unfortunately, it's quite warm here in Minnesota right now. So I did get a couple of stormy days to watch it, which was very good to watch it during a storm. But yeah, there's a couple, I don't want to like, we're not going to talk about it too much because we've sort of alluded to this, but like, there are some dark dips that this show takes. So do be a little careful, but I promise it's going to be okay. But there's a couple moments in episode 6 that I really loved. And one of them is she's talking to her sister, and I think it's one of those moments, I don't remember exactly which conversation they're having, but it's similar to what you said, where it's like, Marion reaches out a hand again, she's giving her another olive branch, and Anne just sort of like smacks that shit right into the ground and rolls out of the room. But what I loved about it, that was such a, like, they do the sibling thing really well in this.
Yeah.
Is she gets a fourth wall break.
Yes.
She's like one of the only other characters to get a fourth wall break. And she looks at the camera like, you're kidding me, right?
No,
like,
I loved
this is
that.
Wild.
So that's something we haven't talked about, is that this show, Anne Lister breaks the fourth wall. And I think that's partially because the idea is with like her journals and everything that this is potentially being like as if we were reading her journal. So we're seeing the story. So now and then she addresses the audience. So yes, Marion gets a fourth wall break, but there's also a moment when she's alone with Miss Walker and she does her thing where like she looks at the camera. Cause I think it's when Miss Walker is like, have you ever done this before? And she's like, no, I've never done this before. And looks at the camera's kind of like, wink. And then Miss Walker's like, what are you looking at? She's like, oh, nothing. Like,
She catches her doing the fourth wall break. Anybody who's watched Fleabag, the priest in Fleabag is the only one who sees Fleabag's fourth wall breaks. And I really love that.
That's awesome.
Have you watched Fleabag?
I tried to start it. I didn't like the humor of the first episode. Didn't catch me. I know.
I am worried about you as a person.
It's okay, Lillian. You have to accept that people have different opinions than your own.
That's not true. Good people think what I think.
Oh my God.
And that has never caused any problems in history ever.
Of course not. I loved that it was like a common kind of little joke that her footmen and like the guys who work in her house are like impeccably dressed with these ridiculous costumes. Mm-hmm. And so often like she'll call in one of them and they're like, as they run into the room, they're like buttoning up their thing. Like they're just like, they're like, oh no, like my costume takes 5 hours to put on. What do you need?
Well, and like, I feel like it's her sense of urgency. Her staff has learned that she doesn't care if you come into the room buttoning your pants. Mm-hmm. She cares that you come into the room fast when she calls.
Yes.
I enjoyed that. I also enjoyed that at least twice the woman who's like in charge of the kitchen, I get mm-hmm. the impression she's very like the head of the house or whatever.
Housekeeper.
She will like call for a footman to open the door and nobody's there. So she has to open it herself. And the first time Miss Walker comes to the house, she's fully covered in blood.
She's been like cutting up rabbits.
And she opens the door and is like, hi, you're real fancy.
It's so good. No, I love all the little, like, there's so many good side characters. As much as I am, like, absolutely obsessed with Miss Lister and Miss Walker, whenever we get the side character stuff, it doesn't feel like
I'm not annoyed by it.
Exactly. It's not, like, just drolling on. I'm like, wait, get us back to what I'm here for. I care about all these people. Their little staff in the house is nice. One thing we have to address real quick, because you said this earlier when we were talking about the antagonist and how the line is used that she'll run circles around him. The scene in the drawing room with him and his mother, who is obsessed with Miss Lister. And she's just like, there, like so aware that she's a lesbian. And she's like, oh yes, she's dipping her hands into Miss Walker's purse and along with some other things. Sorry to shock you ladies. She's like, it's just so good.
Gosh, what was the other? The other line, similar to the running circles around her, the other line that is so good, that is used way too much, is overstepped the mark. Mm. Everyone is talking about the mark and overstepping it. And I'm like, calm down. But I have one more thing. And then I kind of want to end talking about the ending because I love the ending and I feel like it's a nice, sweet place to end.
Perfect.
The cast is incredible. Both the main women, it's Surian Jones and Sophie Ruddle. I didn't recognize them specifically from anything, but they've both been on a ton of stuff.
The woman who plays Anne Walker, she is in Peaky Blinders.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then another, there, all the cast has different things. The sister is from Game of Thrones. But specifically, I want to talk about Gemma Jones, who plays the aunt, was also in a Jane Eyre adaptation. Do you know who she played and what she was in?
I figured she was in Jane Eyre. I don't know. Tell me.
She was in the 1997. She played Mrs. Fairfax. It might have been the 96. I think it was the 97.
Cool.
To forgive me. They're 1 year apart, you guys.
I have another connection for you, which is pretty cool. Mm. So also with the title card of the show, it talks about how the show was created by Sally Ann Wainwright, who also wrote To Walk Invisible, the Bronte movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is on our list, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. I should say gentleman, because there's only really like one of you listening. You're definitely all allowed. And also, one of my favorite things is when we look at our analytics, often we have more non-binary pals than men listening. And I find that fun and funny. And I would love, if you have non-binary friends who might like Jane Eyre, I really like it when that's the gender spread. So please help me out specifically. That's the last of my other notes. And then I just want to talk about their wedding situation at the very end a little bit.
Yeah. So Anne Lister has offered so many times to be like, I want to exchange rings. I want you to live with me at my house. And I want to take the sacrament with you in a church, which is like as close as she can get to actually being married and having a wife. And it breaks my heart in the last few episodes when there's so much pushback from Miss Walker. But then one thing you talked about earlier, Lillian, is like a misconception about mental health is that it doesn't mean that you're strong. I love that in kind of also a Jane Eyre fashion, Miss Walker, you know, she goes away, but she kind of finds her independence while she's gone. And then she's able to come back and fully love Miss Lister. And I love that she, despite like not being totally well, she like has that moment where she has her backbone when her cousins come to rescue her and they're like, oh no, your crazy like brother-in-law is coming. We should go. And she's like, I'm going to talk to him. Like, I'm not running off. You're not going to talk on my behalf. I'm telling him what's what. And she has that great moment of strength. And then while they're in the carriage, she's like, I want to find that doctor and I want to get well again. Cause I love that. It's not like, oh, she stood up. She's totally fixed. It's like, she's like, no, I've got a lot of healing to do, but I would like to go home now, get some help and find my future wife, please. And thank you.
And I just love, like, I loved the way that they cut the wedding together with the young
pig farmer
boy.
Guy who murdered his dad.
So it was sort of like, it was this very bittersweet moment of like, these two are getting something that is a similar commitment to them. It matters the same amount to them, but they also don't get to celebrate with family and friends. And like, they don't get to have this big wedding that would be a huge event for everyone, but also they get this quiet moment that means something to them, which I find lovely. And then probably my favorite, I love that they didn't just end it there. I love that they're having this conversation as they leave. And there's this very married people banter that happens where she's like, don't be condescending. And she's like, no, I'm not. You're so smart and strong. And she goes, I know that. I told you that I feel that way with you, but I also am not dumb. And I can tell when you're being patronizing. Like,
and also her instantly like fussing over her to be like, stop looking at your watch, put that away.
Yeah. It's very much like, she's like, I didn't mean to. And then it's like, her Miss Lister being used to being the one who has the grand plans. And she's like, so she's like, instead of sitting in this moment where Miss Walker is getting annoyed that she's not sitting in the moment, she's talking already about the next steps and what they need to do. Cause that's how she stayed safe. Right. Like, she's always been three steps ahead of everyone. And she's like, instead of telling my aunt that I'm moving in, we're going to move all my stuff first and then tell them. And she's like, that's actually a better plan. And she goes, I know you keep saying I'm smart and strong. And it's funny to me that you're surprised when I act smart and strong.
No, it's a beautiful moment. And I love, that we get the parallel of their wedding against the other wedding. Because you're right. It's kind of a beautiful way. I think it's the show's way of saying both these marriages are valid and important by having them shown kind of cut in between side by side. So it's a great moment.
So if you're looking for a way to be a little bit gayer this Pride Month, watch Gentleman Jack. And then also go watch all those other movies, because I've watched all the trailers for them and they have guaranteed happily ever afters. So go watch them.
Oh, also, can we get a round of applause for the freaking bangers that is both the opening theme song and the closing theme song? I am so obsessed with the opening theme song. It doesn't even have words. It's just this like this jig. And literally, Lillian, even though I've already watched the whole season before, I put on episode one. I just made my morning coffee and I overfill it like I always do. And I sat down. I'm like, oh, bum, 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 and I spilled it all over myself. I'm like, ah, shit. But I can't not dance when that song is playing.
I think technically it's illegal. So, but watch all those things. You can, if you want to know, I don't remember off the top of my head what the other ones we had were, but if you're looking for more Lady Love this June, you can find all of those on our social at Airbuds, on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. YouTube. I know I've said this like 7,000 times. We need 6 more followers on Twitter, or on YouTube, to get to 100. Yay. And I would love that. It feels big to me. I want to get there. Get me there, guys. Thank you. Hooray. Also, Piper made a great montage video of our trip to Arizona. We're going to be doing a blooper one soon in our Patreon. But if you want to watch what that experience was like, Piper kept in a lot of songs that we sang to each other that I didn't think were going to make it into the video. I thought it was going to be muted. But
surprise.
They are very funny, and I highly recommend watching it.
Yay. So we have to rate this, Lillian. And
oh, gosh.
It's Pride Month, so you're going first.
That's bullying. That feels like it should be the other way around. You shouldn't get to bully me during Pride.
You want me to go first? I just wanted to step aside and let you lead.
I'm going
to
give it 9.5 out of 10. You go and then I'll tell you my thing, because I have to think of, there's so many good choices.
Okay, I'm going to give mine. I'm giving this show a 10 out of 10. I really like it. Nice. I'm giving this a 10 out of 10. Thermometers, and I'm choosing thermometers because we didn't talk about it before, but it's my favorite thing that when she goes on vacation, she carries this giant thermometer with her, and she has a fight with her ex-girlfriend in the carriage, and she's like, I'd like to carry a thermometer with me. So what? It's not a crime. It's just like this giant gaudy thing. It's so good.
So good. I think I'm going to go with because I have so many fashion moments that I was trying to incorporate. So I think I'm just going to go with 1830s fashion, and I'm going to pick one of my favorite, craziest outfits and have that be the visual.
Nice. 9.5 out of 10 1830s fashions.
Yes.
Awesome. Love it. So we've given you a lot of our spiels already. I'm just going to say, if you want to give us $3 for extra stuff, and just because you love us, please do. Yeah. Our Patreon is Airbuds, easy to find.
We
follow
accept
us there.
Money in exchange for love.
Exactly. Send us emails, message us, share with your friends, leave reviews. In your 5-star reviews, please tell us your favorite Pride parade moment when you saw a cool float or someone dancing and it made you smile. Tell us about that.
Favorite activity at Pride parades is Googling what all the flags mean, because I always learn new things.
Yay.
Next week we are going to be doing it back to Jane Eyre. We have quite a long mini series that we're watching for the following week. So next week we're going to be doing a character study. And we're going to talk about Helen and Miss Temple, and then I'll touch a little bit on Mary and Diana Rivers.
Awesome. Going back to talking more lady time.
Yeah.
Still Pride Month.
That's not how that works. None of those characters are gay.
Hey, I've got theories about Helen.
That's a really great point. So do I.
So tune in for that. We love you guys. Happy Pride. Thank you for joining us. And happy Jane Eyre reading, watching, and binging.
Nice. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.